Welcome into the BBP. This is the Bengals Beat Podcast presented by Inquirer Sports. Here, your Cincinnati.com Bengals beat writers, Paul Diener Jr. and Jim Ossarski, invite you beyond the headlines and inside Paul Brown Stadium for the scoop on all things Bengals. Find out the insider news as well as listening on conversations with players, coaches, and others relevant to the club. Remember, you can subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Just search Inquirer Bengals Beat Podcast. And as always, you can listen on our free Cincinnati Inquirer Bengals app. If you don't have the app, well, I suggest rectifying that situation immediately in the App Store. Now, if you're down with BBP, let's go. All right, welcome to a special edition of the BBP. That's right. These are crowd favorites, as far as I know. These are favorites of our hardcore diehard audience. That is the road trip BBP live from inside a Honda Accent.
Yeah, it's not good.
It's not good.
It's not a good car. When you get in and you got to do the check and there's already a crack in the windshield.
Yeah,
it's not good.
When you rent your car and you just immediately take 8 pictures while you're circling around just so they know the extent of the damage that's already on it when you got it. No amenities on this thing.
No.
We're riding in 1994 style right now. But that's okay. We're on beautiful, constantly under construction I-75 on our way back from Detroit. And Jim Ossarski behind the wheel, Paul Diener Jr. in the passenger seat as we were rolling. We left our photographer Sam Green in Detroit because we were sick of his attitude.
Yeah.
Not really, actually, from up there as family, so we just went ahead and left him behind.
Yeah.
So it's just the two of us, and we are rolling back where the Bengals beat the Lions in their second preseason game, 30-14. There were many positive aspects of this. We'll get into some of those. But most of you listening right now, if I know my Bengals fan base like I feel I do, you woke up all mad about the negatives.
Yeah.
The few negatives. Because one of them in particular is a Bengals negative fan wheelhouse.
Yeah.
I mean, it is just the Mike Nugent storyline is one that angry Bengal fan just loves to hammer, and there is ammunition today. So I want to run down a little bit what we're going to get to. We're going to talk about the Mike Nugent kicker situation after a couple of misses in Detroit. We're going to talk a little bit about what has become a even more interesting offensive line situation as another injury occurs. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Right.
The stockpiling of injuries at this point, particularly now at the same position, Cedric Abuehi and Jake Fisher are both suffering injuries that are going to keep them out for a little bit. We'll get into that. We're going to talk again because we have to continue to talk about Tyler Boyd, who had another big night.
Yeah.
And I think it's now bringing up a new line of questioning as far as how quickly can you shove this guy into a more prominent role. We'll get into that. Then we're going to take questions from you, Twitter Q&A. You guys have sent us a bunch of questions. We'll try to get to as many as we can. Jim will be mad about something likely driving-oriented, considering he's been the one suffering through the litany of orange barrels that is I-75. So we'll get to all of that. All right. First of all, good road trip. First road trip of the season. Detroit, thumbs up.
Yeah, it was better than Buffalo.
But Buffalo's like your all-time low.
It is the all-time low.
You just hate it. You wanted to hate Buffalo is the problem.
Yeah, I didn't like Buffalo from the moment we landed. Yeah, it was all right.
Slow's Barbecue made it.
Yeah,
was a major upgrade.
Slow's Barbecue was a good choice. The Country Hawk chicken sandwich, the sweet potato mash. Sam Green with the recommendation.
Dude, their mac and cheese was the fire too. There's two. If you ever get to Detroit, there's two Slow's Barbecues locations, both a little bit on the outskirts of downtown. We were in Corktown, I think it was called.
Oh, I don't know.
I think it was called Corktown. I think it's sort of like a new wannabe over the Rhine, kind of trying to develop. But it was good. Awesome food there. Ford Field is one of my favorite stadiums in the loop once you get inside.
Yeah.
The outside and the navigation around downtown tends to be a little sketch. It's one of my favorite press boxes. It's an open air indoor.
Yeah.
So you get, so often we're behind glass, and I know this is stuff that the fans are like, shut up, this is ridiculous. But there's not enough places that put you into the feel of being in the stadium. It's so loud in there, and you really get the feel of the energy in the building. And it's a lot of fun. The facility's beautiful. On the inside, it's absolutely a beautiful stadium.
And I will say, their Lion Roar is better than the Bengal Roar.
It's deeper. It's deeper. It's more. It's more like a lion, like on safari.
Yeah.
Whereas I feel like the Bengal Lion Roar is one that they stood a little far away from in the Cincinnati Zoo.
Yeah. Or added some bass to it.
Yeah, very possible.
It was like a cat that they just put up to 11.
Yeah. We'll have more riveting roar comparison conversations for
That's
you.
That's for C-Trent.
Yeah.
Who will join us at some point.
Yes.
Late in the year. He's a roar expert.
Well, depending on your team, there are different types of roars.
Yeah.
And some like their roar to be longer. Some like them to be more just quick and intimidating.
Yeah.
The Bengals sounds more like a broken trumpet. You know, I think they need to work on their roar. All right, that's enough. We've done enough of that. Let's start talking about what you guys came here to hear about. And you came here to complain about Mike Nugent. Because that's a Bengals fan topic. And let's get into the reality here. Mike Nugent has hit at around an 82% clip here the last 4 years. His best year was 2011, and he hit at about an 86% clip,
yeah,
which is the league average. So his best year was an NFL average year.
Yeah.
He is not one of the best kickers in the league. He's basically been a bit of the devil that you know around here, and I think that's where the comfort factor, you know, the Carolina kick, obviously, in the tie game 2014 stands out to a lot of people. But for the most part, he's been pretty good in big spots. But there's been when you have those extra kicks that you miss in games, whether you're talking about in the first half against Denver,
right,
or whatever you're talking about, you just can't have the amount of misses that you've seen. And now you have a two preseason games where he struggled. He misses from 48 and he misses a PAT in Detroit. That's inside in the dome,
right,
after a miss from 45 against Minnesota. Zach Hocker is here. I mean, where do you go? I mean, where do you go? Is it time to start, after a couple of preseason games, kicking tires around the league and investigating other camp battles?
Yeah, I don't know how many kickers you can sign. I mean, we're rolling into week three of the preseason. You know, cuts are going to have to come. You got injuries at other positions. I mean, how many? You know, Zach Hocker, it's funny, Paul, because he was signed in the offseason. You know, Darren Simmons, special teams coordinator, told us, hey, he's here. We liked him coming out of college. You know, we thought, you know, the Saints gave him a run. The Rams gave him a run a year ago. But he, after a very brief drill, all of a sudden went away.
Yep.
You know, no one really knows what's wrong with him because he's not on the rehab field. So he took some warm-up kicks in Detroit. So the assumption is he's ready to practice if he's at least kicking? Because he wasn't doing that at all. But I don't know. I mean, I don't know if you can sign more kickers.
You know, that's just it, is we talk about the league average being 86. There's people that are below that average. There are people that are, I mean, you have an option of going with Mike Nugent where he's going to make 82% of his kicks,
right,
or playing the kicker roulette game where you're trying to find that guy. And you could be like Pittsburgh was after they had the Swisham injury last year.
Right.
And they trade for Scobie, and then they bring in another Boswell, and, you know, you end up landing on another guy. And you go through four kickers.
Right.
And suffer important missed field goals because you're doing that. And then maybe you do eventually find one. But you have to work those kinks out when they matter in the regular season. So are you willing to take a guy that you know that makes, you know what his percentage is going to be, and you might not be 100% comfortable with it, but it could be worse.
Right.
It's not like some guy who's going to make 92% of his kicks is sitting there without a team right now.
Right. Basically, yeah. it's a lot of guys like Zach Cocker. And I think that's, and I think devil you know is probably the right phrase, Paul, because it's, you know, you look around the league and there's some guys that, you know, and some teams that feel real good about running their guy out there. But in reality, I mean, there's a lot of teams that are always looking for better, and I think the Bengals have been looking for better. I just don't know if that's out there.
I don't know that it is either, and kicker is kind of becoming one of those positions like quarterback where you kind of say to yourself, why aren't there more people that can do this better?
Right.
Because it's hard, and no one likes their kicker because misses are accentuated.
Right.
And they are particular with Nuge, who's, once you've been around long enough and at a level where he misses kicks, it's just, it's frustrating for fans. And I get that. I just don't know where. I think you absolutely need to be keeping an eye on any training camp kicking battles that are going on. Now, there aren't many of those.
Right. And what does that mean? That means you're trying to sign the guy who lost.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's...
But maybe it was good in the losing effort.
Yeah.
You know, maybe just wasn't perfect.
Right. Which is hard to know because, again, how many true camp battles are there where that guy who lost is looking good in games?
Yeah.
Because, you know, what are practice kicks? I mean, you maybe jinxed Nuge by talking about how perfect he was in training camp to this point. I mean...
Yeah, this is my fault.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, he did not miss the entire camp, and then I wrote about it, and now he's been just awful. So 100% my fault on that one. I know you guys are frustrated. I just don't know. The thing about Nuge is he has had struggles before and then rebounded to go on really impressive runs. You know, after the miss against Carolina, which is probably the most prominent miss, one of the most prominent misses of his time in Cincinnati, he had his best run as a kicker, where he wouldn't miss. And so you know that he can handle and won't implode.
Right.
There's something to that, too, and I think that's where the comfort comes from. And, you know, in Zach Cocker, until he gets out there and proves he can do better, There's really nothing else where they can go from here, unless there's a surprise somewhere where another team has a young guy, a young kicker, and they're willing to cut a veteran that's proven.
Right.
And I think that's really the only way that it's going to happen. We'll see where that stuff falls out in the next couple of weeks. I definitely think that they have to be keeping an eye on it. It'd be negligent if they weren't.
Right.
But I would put the percentage chance that Nugent is here on opening day, I'd say fittingly around about 82%.
Yeah, I honestly, it'd be Zach Cocker has to practice this week, and he's got to kick a bunch in games, the next two games. I mean, and really look great about it. Because here's the thing, Paul. I think, you know, even if they like the guy that, you know, let's say Cocker is healthy and they decide, you know what, we're going to roll with this guy who, I mean, his percentage, his make percentage last year was not good.
Well worse than anything.
Yeah. If you were to release Mike Nugent, he's being signed somewhere else.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not one of those situations where you're like, oh, well, let's roll with this guy, see what happens. And he goes 0-3 in New York. And you're like, oh, let's go back to the guy we know. Well, you know what? He's probably gone. And then, yeah, then you jump on the carousel and you know. I mean, Pittsburgh barely made it out of that.
They got lucky because, you know, they ended up in a situation where a guy that, I mean, they traded for Scobie thinking that was the answer, and right. He was awful.
Right.
You just, it's weird. You don't, it's like a golf swing. Sometimes it leaves you, and you've got to go try to find one. But going to try and find a new golf swing, you just bring in a lot of chances. The one thing you know about Nuge, and then this is, you know, it real inside in our business is there's just guys you just root for. We've talked about this before. You root for them on a personal level because they're good, they're stand-up, that type of stuff. But you got to also, you understand a certain point in this business, and you got to do what you got to do. I don't think anybody is saying that the fact that Nuge is a good guy and he stands up is a reason that they should keep him. I don't think that really even factors that much into the equation. But for, I mean, it's just, he's not afraid to stand up and tell you, I sucked.
Yeah, which he did on Thursday night in Detroit.
He did. And so I want to bring you a little bit of Nuge and his reaction to what he did in Detroit. This is from after the game. Just talking about his real rough night inside Ford Field.
Nuge, any concerns?
No concerns. Just a terrible night. Hit the ball well in warm-ups. Just hit the ball horrible in the game. Just got to improve.
What were you thinking on that 50 yard?
Pretty much what I was thinking on the rest of them. You know, I have a few things going through my head to focus on, and didn't hit that ball, didn't do anything different on that ball than the other ones. Just the other ones, I think I caught a little too much ground and just hit them terribly.
Hey, that's rare for you. You don't do that.
My career, I've hit the ball extremely well in the preseason games, in the last two games. It was pathetic.
All right, so there's a little bit of Mike Nugent talking about his rough night. We will move on so everyone's blood pressure can come down a little bit. Everyone can stop yelling at us on Twitter about the kicker situation. Everyone's well aware.
Moving to Brandon Tate, then.
Yeah.
No,
okay,
sorry.
Well, that's the other thing, is you do have that element where it's those two guys. I'm trying to get the hashtag started here, the Tater, because the more people seem to hate, he actually has done some. He does some nice things. Now he's been given more opportunity than he normally gets,
right?
Because of all the injuries and issues going on at receiver, he's made some nice plays. He's had some nice returns. He's done his Brandon Tate thing.
You know what, Paul? He's in the mix.
In the mix. Brandon Tate in the mix.
Yep.
It's the ultimate. It's the ultimate line.
Yeah.
And he'll always be in the mix. Yep. It seems. So. Tate hate, Nuge hate are all out, but it's someone tweeted at me during the game, Marvin just likes guys that are reliable and consistent. in anger and frustration, right, over Brandon Tate. And I just couldn't help but think, are there coaches out there that hate reliable and consistent?
Yeah.
Is there something wrong with reliable and consistent? I mean, I know you want explosive, but...
Yeah, but, that you know, those guys are hard to find. You know, that's why you draft and develop and hope something goes right, and then you have guys like Mike Nugent and Brandon Tate who they know what they are, and, you know, there's a reason they've been... That's the funny thing, Paul, about this. You know, around, especially in football, because I think in baseball and basketball with the guaranteed contracts, like, when you kind of get stuck with a guy, like, you are literally stuck with that guy. Whereas in football, if better is available, like, the league is constructed for better to be had. You know, like, you can literally cut anybody you want.
Absolutely.
So I think, you know, and I understand that there's always a frustration on a fan level, because you're a fan and that's just what it is. But from a business sense, from a personnel sense, we can tell you for a fact, if there were other options, that the coaching staff in the front office felt good about, they would be on the team.
The one thing,
so
though,
it's just, you know,
this along the, I mean, a bit of devil's advocate and exactly kind of along the lines of what you're saying, though, is there are some teams more willing than others to take a risk on the upside and deal with the unpredictability.
Right.
The Bengals are not one of those. And I know that fans want a team willing to take a risk because the fans don't care if the risk blows up in their face.
Right. Until it blows up in their face.
Until it blows
and they
up.
Lose a game.
And they say, get rid of that guy. Yeah. Go get another guy.
Right.
Because you can always just go get another guy.
Right.
But for a coach, there is a comfort in predictability. Whether it's ideal, whether it's slightly below average, at least you know what it is.
Right.
And you can coach around that. You can choose to go for it instead of kicking the 47-yard field goal in a big spot or whatever. You can choose to run Brandon Tate out there for a fair catch when you know you don't want, you want somebody to make the right decision.
Right.
Or you need someone that can take a receiver screen and maybe make a guy miss. You know what that is, and you know what it's not. And so when you're trying to coach to win a game, you just want to know what your pieces do.
Right.
You don't want to be there and you're looking at your, you're looking at your queen in your chess match, and all of a sudden it can't go diagonally anymore.
Right.
You know? That's a bad thing. Although, let's be honest, Tate and Nugent are not. They're like rooks. Or like, yeah, I'm not sure. But they're not. They could be even pawns, to be honest. Kickers are often pawns in this league.
Yeah.
Anyway, enough about the two most targeted.
I don't think you ever have enough.
Yeah, no, you're right.
I'm derailing this BBP.
You're right about that. And the other, so to kind of go a little bit further into it, Alex Erickson has another nice punt return. It was a 30-yard punt return, his only attempt. So now he's basically had a fair catch where he had to make a last-minute decision and didn't drop the ball, an 80-yard punt return for a touchdown, and a 30-yard punt return up the middle.
Yep.
That's not bad.
Nope.
It's not bad. Now, who knows what that means outside of him being locked into a practice squad spot at best, or at worst, I mean.
Right.
You know, and then a chance to make this team at best. But another one, nice one from him. So that spot, Rex Burkhead took a kick, had a kick return.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some balls in the air there. That was the first time we've seen Rex do that.
Yeah, he kind of laughed about it after the game, Paul. He said he hasn't returned a kick in years. But, you know, that, and Rex is a whole other issue. We kind of talked about that last week where how do you get that guy on the field? And he was used a lot. Suffered a minor shoulder injury. He seems fairly confident. You know, he'll be good to go Sunday in Jacksonville. So that bears watching just with how thin that offense is getting. You know, they held him out for an undisclosed reason last week. Had about 80 yards of total offense, which we saw in training camp, like the last week of training camp. He was being used quite a bit. He kind of forecast a Rex Burkhead workload in Detroit. But, Tyler Boyd returned the first punt. And kind of what you talked about earlier, Pi, you know, if Tyler Boyd's going to have a more important role on offense, I don't know if you want to run him back there on punts. You know, he kind of falls into the Adam Jones situation then, where, you know, you're kind of losing weapons and you're losing issues, you know, losing guys, and it's like, do you want to expose him? Especially because he admitted that, A, he shouldn't have fielded the punt at the 5, and then B, he felt he had to make something out of it because he made that wrong decision. Which, you know, that when all those bodies flying around, I don't know. I mean, I guess good for him to admit all that, but, you know, when you need him then to stay on the field and catch passes.
Tyler Boyd is not returning punts on my Bengals team if I'm a coach or a GM or whatever. He is too important. We've seen him make too many plays, and your receiving core is too thin. You might as well send A.J. Green back there to return punts at this point, because you cannot afford to get that guy banged up when there are other options. There just are.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't... He looked good at it, but, I mean, it doesn't really... It just doesn't matter to me. You got to focus on what's important.
Yeah.
And the big picture of what's important is not who can go out there and return punts when guys are gunning right. at somebody who's kind of inexperienced in making decisions. Maybe he tries to bring one out that he shouldn't when he has a guy right on him and gets blown up.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I just stuff like that. Guys that are integral to your offense and defense should not be back there on a regular basis. And that's why guys like Brandon Tate are back there on a regular right. basis. So there's a lot of different options yeah. there. Boyd, again, he has an incredible diving 26-yard catch on Andy Dalton on the run,
yeah.
blanket coverage, ball that almost looked like it was being thrown away. I mean, it's one of those where Boyd's the only guy that yeah. can get it. Incredible diving catch. He has a touchdown where he sort of ends up in the seam and reacts to a back shoulder throw from A.J. McCarron for six. Listen, folks, I know you guys love your fantasy information. The kid is real. He can play. And he's shown it at every single opportunity he's been given. He was great immediately in camp. He kept being good in camp. He was good in the mock game where he had a touchdown pass. He was good in the first preseason game where he had a 40-yard reception from A.J. McCarron. And he was good again last night where he had a diving catch and another touchdown. All he does is make plays every single time he's out there. And I think it's fair to say his role and the expectations for what his role should be have expanded over these two and a half, 3 weeks.
Yeah, the important thing to me of all of it, Paul, was that catch on the bootleg. It was a moving pocket where coordinator Kenzie Mpeezy had Andy Dalton take the snap out of shotgun, roll right, pocket moved. I mean, Tyler Boyd was the deep option on that throw. And the reason I really highlight that is really not so much that he caught. I mean, yes, he caught it. But with Brandon LaFell's injury, it really was the first extended game look that he got with Andy. And there's your quarterback throwing it to a spot. Only his guy can make a play. And as we've seen with A.J. Green and Marvin Jones, and then maybe a lesser extent most of new, sometimes when you're the receiver, you have to make the catch. Every yep. throw's not... Me, personally, I thought the throw was a great throw because, to your point, that was the only space it was going to be to have it be complete. But you need the guy to catch it. You need him to be there, run the route, and then catch the ball. And he did that. And the reason, again, is one... I know, understand it's one pass, but it's who it was from and the mechanics of all of it. And I think if Brandon LaFell is going to be dealing with this injury... and going to miss maybe more time, more practice time, more game time. Andy Dalton needs to trust him. And that's, that goes a long way. Doing it in games, in coverage, matters more than practice, especially to a six-year quarterback.
He was put in there as a starter. I mean, they come to us before the game and say, okay, here's your injuries. Brandon LaFell, who has the injured hand, expectations are he'll be back. Should be back by week one, assuming he doesn't elect to have surgery, which all experts indicate he's not going to. But so they say this before the game. Well, Brandon Tate's expected to start and face Brandon LaFell, and there's Tyler Boyd out there as a starter. I think that's a message. I think that's it's the coaches are go be that guy. And to me, you can almost make an argument that Tyler Boyd should be starting in front of Brandon LaFell. Because he will have had more work with Andy Dalton
yeah.
by in week one in New York than Brandon LaFell has. LaFell is a pro. He's a vet. He knows how to play the game. He understands the NFL. So I get why you would say he's your number two. And there's not a massive difference between the three and the two because you run a lot of three receiver sets. But still,
right.
you've seen enough where I'm predicting right now by week somewhere between week 6 and 8 Tyler Boyd is your number two receiver on this team, and he's out there along with it's just him and AJ Green. That's the way it's going to be, and I think Brandon LaFell comes in a three wide receiver sets, and Boyd moves into the slot.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I know we debated this a little last week. You know, what we've seen out of at least early in these first two preseason games was Ryan Hewitt, CJ Uzama, you know, kind of tight formations, you know, heavy, if you will. Whereas Tyler Boyd offers a playmaking option that Brandon LaFell doesn't. And we knew that from the beginning. I mean, that, you know, Brandon LaFell, again, is who he is. So that's what I think is intriguing about Boyd as sort of in that two receiver set, Paul, is especially if Tyler Eifert isn't back yet by week one, or even if he is, I mean, how effective is he going to be with a day or two of practice, and how much can you actually run him out there? You know what I mean? So it's Boyd offers he's not going to draw double coverage with AJ Green, but it gives you something to think about.
Absolutely. The best lineup for this team, to me, if we're a few weeks into this season and Boyd continues to do what he's doing, is Dalton with Hill and Hewitt behind him in the I formation, Eifert at tight end, Green and Boyd. And your offensive line. Those are all your best, finding the way to get your best players onto the field.
Right.
If you're healthy in that respect, that's a potent offense right there that can do a lot of different things. Where Eifert can split out into a three wide, you can power run down people's throats with Hewitt and Hill. There's just a lot you can do there, and I think that's what we're seeing a bit out of Ken Zampezi now. And I think Boyd is a huge part of that because of what he's shown, being pretty dynamic here. So we'll keep an eye on all that. I do want to bring in a little bit of Tyler Boyd audio from him after the game and hear from him talking about his latest breakout and sort of what he was seeing. And you can kind of see the rookie mixed with the playmaker all sort of at once. Here's a little bit of Tyler Boyd from after the Bengals win against the Lions.
On the punt return, it used to be the old saying, you put your feet on the 10 and you don't go inside of it. In the preseason, just return what you can. And
you know what? I definitely felt that I was behind the 10. I should have let it go, but I felt that I had a lot of room to make up yardage if I'd have caught it, you know, and then I was right. You know, I just wanted to make one guy miss and just slip it in and get as much as I could.
Did you get the sense he had outkicked it? Did you get the sense he had outkicked his numbers?
Definitely, that's the only reason why I caught the ball, you know, because he definitely outkicked the coverage. I was supposed to let the ball go if it's over the 10, but I felt like I had enough room, opportunity to make a play, and I got a lot of yards on the play, and I got what I could.
Were you thinking, I better make something good because they're going to be all over me?
You know what? As long as I secured the ball, then I felt like it wouldn't have been that hard. But at the same time, I definitely wanted to see me make yards if I catch the ball right there. You know, but as long as I secured it, I don't think I'd have got any criticism.
Sorry, I was late to touchdown. It looked like you just beat the guy down the seam. You got behind him down the seam.
You know, it was an excellent play call. You know, we affected it real well against the defense. They were in a roll, cover three, I believe. I ain't really sure, but we've been practicing that all through practice with the same look, and we got the look with Brandon, the perfect play to beat that defense.
What's that look give you? What did that look give you?
Once I went out there, I was thinking that it wasn't the right look, but then again, when we said hut, pre-snap, I didn't really know. After he said hut, I seen everything moving and people shifting to the zone, so I knew I had it. You know, so once I got the ball stopped, I got the ball, and I felt like it was definitely
all right, so now we move on to the offensive line, which we're talking a lot about offense.
Yeah.
Because that's where all the issues are.
Yeah, right.
Mainly where all the injuries are.
Yeah.
Where Cedric Abuehi, he goes down last week with a toe injury. It's going to keep him out 2 to 3 weeks. He's expected to be back for the opener, which is good. Because Jake Fisher, who was starting at left tackle in place of Andrew Whitworth, who had a shoulder injury, then Witt comes back, so he moves over to right tackle to fill in for Cedric Abuehi with his toe injury, and Jake Fisher sprains his ankle, and he goes down, and now you're down to, they put in veteran Eric Winston in there at right tackle. So for the rest of the preseason, Eric Winston is your starting right tackle.
Yep.
It's just, it's a mess when this stuff happens.
Yeah, especially, it's always, and we examined this a little bit when Tyler Croft hurt his knee, and I think at that point, Ryan Hewitt had missed a few days of practice. It all sort of coincided, right? CJ Uzomah's pretty much taking every snap. And then the Will Jackson and the Darquez Denard injuries happen on the same day. Teams are built in some ways for an injury, but it's when they stack at a specific position, and the Bengals have had that. And again, the positive remains that, aside from Andrew Billings and Will Jackson, they're all sprains and strains and not season-ending, or at least is what we're being told. The O-line, Paul, they look good. Andy Dalton does get it out fast, and he wasn't really pressured very much. I would say the run game, the stats weren't there, whatever that means in the preseason. But Jeremy Hill's touchdown had a huge hole. Rex Burkhead, they kept in the interior starters, Russell Bodine, Kevin Zeitler, Clint Bowling, and then Eric Winston. Late, huge holes. So I guess if for game's sake, I guess they looked okay.
Yeah, absolutely. And there was a little bit of nasty to them once they got down inside the goal to go situation. You could kind of see they were not going to have a repeat of last week. I think they kind of went through a whole week of hearing about how they didn't score touchdowns against Minnesota on those long drives, and really blew open that hole, which, Jeremy Hill kind of told me after the game. He said, well, as soon as I saw the linebacker move over from that side into the A-gap, knowing the play call option that we had going right there with that counter, that it was going to be him versus the safety for 6 points. And the safety hardly even came up into the gap, and it was no match. But you got to credit the guys for blocking it upright.
Yeah.
I mean, just a massive, massive hole. And then you mentioned Burkhead, where Clint Bowling, I think, moved a guy about 15 yards across the line to clear nothing but green behind him, and Burkhead goes for whatever 25 or 30 yards. So the offensive line does seem to be in good shape in that respect. You would expect it to. It's a lot of veterans in there, so they're in good shape there. But they need Obwehi to come back and be okay, and that toe to heal the way it needs to, because we don't know what's going to be happening with Jake Fisher. We're still early on and figuring out exactly where he's at and how serious that's going to be. Just happened last night, but Marvin Lewis says it's a sprained ankle, but Marvin Lewis has said things before that have been wrong. So we'll see where all that goes. But for now, it doesn't appear to be anything like it's going to be a season ender, which when he first went down, that was a thought. It looked like it could have been an Achilles type of thing. But the issue he was having, he couldn't even stand back up on it and all that. It's a bit messy in there.
The thing that was one of our training camp questions, a month ago, was, is Cedric Obwehi ready to start at right tackle? I mean, he was just sort of, okay, you're the guy. And then he played one game. I mean, because he missed all of OTAs and mini camp with an undisclosed injury, not related to the toe or the knee. And now he's missing reps. Jake Fisher, now at least he played a year ago, but he didn't play tackle. Then he got all left tackle work, and he was second team left tackle, so that kind of made sense. Well, now he flipped to his side for 3 days, 4 days. And the thing is, the toe is interesting, Paul, because that they have to let that heal, because that can flare up again, and all of a sudden you're doing the dance. The turf toe dance of like, well, now he's out for another week or two or whatever. You know what I mean? And the sprained ankles, Darquez Denard, Marvin Lewis said that was going to be, what, a week?
Yeah.
10 days. And now, Darquez told us, well, September 11th's the date that we need to be ready by. Yeah. So sprained ankle, depending where it is, what severity, all that stuff, you're talking weeks of practice and weeks of games.
I feel like at the end of every season, I hear a story. I mean, it's every year. There's a story about a guy who underperformed and always said, and it always is like, well, I had that high ankle sprain early in the season, and I never could quite get over it. Michael Johnson's talked about that from his year in Tampa, and Ray Malugas talked about that in the past. That stuff happens. It just happens all the time. Those are things that will just end up lingering for you, and your worry While all of these injuries, we continue to talk about the fact that they should be back by this, by the opener or whatever, is that they just end up being nagging injuries throughout the season, and that diminish your returns on these guys' performances. So I think, to me, that's what I am more concerned about if I'm a Bengals coach right now, is the nagginess,
yeah,
as the season goes on, rather than games missed. Yeah. These are types of things when you talk about sprained ankles and toes. You know, turf toe goes on for months,
yeah,
for people, and it's just always going to be a thing. I mean, the year that A.J. Green had turf toe, we heard about it all season.
Yeah.
He was trying to fight his way through that and was playing at about 80-85%. So, you know,
or was it 82%?
82% is whatever. Okay. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. So, you know, it's just, that's to me where my concern is, with, particularly when you talk about this right tackle position that has now got two guys with nagging injuries. All right. It's time for our special time. In every single BBP now, where we find out what is making Jim so mad. All right, Jim, your drama has been built. Tell me, why are you mad today?
Yeah, I hate to bring up, you know, traffic related issues, you know, two out of the first 3 weeks we've done this, but it is our first road trip. We drove to Detroit. I don't understand this, Paul. Why is I-75 under construction to the entire state of Ohio? I don't understand it. It makes me angry. You're right. I have been behind the wheel. We've had stretches where it's been nice, you know, two lanes. You know, some trucks getting in my way, you know, but...
Oh, and do not let trucks get in your way, because right, that's the first thing that ever made you mad.
Right. But I that's what made, you know, I don't understand it. I don't understand why, you know, a state feels like, you know what, let's take this major thoroughfare and we'll make it orange.
We'll make it orange.
You know?
Well, why... south of Toledo, about 70 miles, the state of Ohio decided, like, they were, it was maybe some kid who loved playing SimCity, just wanted to create a new city.
Yeah, that was...
We're just going to make four ramps,
yeah, you couldn't
four
get
interchanges that are all basically been blown up and restart. Like, it looks like they're about to build a new metropolis out of corn.
Right. And you can't get off anywhere?
No. It's bad.
You know, I made the smart decision of saying, you know, we'll fill up in Detroit. Because I think I was like, sometimes you want to do that. You just want to get on the road. And yep, you're like, all right, now I'll get gas at, like, you know, at whatever point. I'm glad we didn't decide to do that. Because we would be doing this BBP, I don't know, we would have mushed up by some trucks. Because you couldn't go anywhere.
You couldn't go anywhere. And this is on top of the obviously never-ending I-75 between Lower Lateral and the river project that's been going on since, well, I don't know, because I was born in 1980, and it was happening the day I was born. So I'm pretty sure that they're still trying to get that one right, which is really, that's the foundation, the root of all evil in my life, is the fact that they cannot get that straight, and now it's extended all the way across the state. This interstate is just doomed here. That's all there is to it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you know what? That wasn't as mad as you've been in the past. Maybe being behind the wheel at this moment actually calms you, your nerves.
Well, you know, I am responsible for you right now.
That's you know sad.
I gotta keep you safe.
I will not make you any more mad than you already are. All right, hey, Twitter questions. Twitter Q&A time. Let's do some Twitter Q&A. I sent a shout-out asking for some of you guys to holler at us. We got some good ones. I want to start off with, from Rich P. He says, given Bernard's successes and Hill's struggles last year, does Bernard get more carries this season? Fantasy alert. I said it's a fantasy football prodding.
It's always the root of it, isn't it?
Well, it's draft season, so people want to know about carry distribution all the time.
Don't worry about carries.
No, my answer to the questions, if in short-winded, is no. I see it being very similar to last year, with maybe even a little more towards Hill, but pretty similar to last year. I think Ken Zampi, he's doing exactly what we were just talking about, getting all your best players in the field, and that means maybe a little more power sets, and that features Jeremy Hill a little more often.
Yeah, I think carries is just so old school. I'm not an analytics guy. I'm not a metrics guy in football. That's you kind of roll into that a little bit, but I do think carries are. Like, I don't know. People shouldn't talk about that anymore. It's touches. And so to me, Jeremy Hill might get technically rushing attempts at a greater level than Giovanni Bernard. But at the end of the day, they're both going to, in my opinion, are going to touch the ball, assuming health, about the same.
Yeah.
And it's just... I think there's going to be those games as there were last year and from what, I can recall you guys saying a couple years ago where, maybe Jeremy Hill's hot and the Bengals take the opening kick and they go 85 yards and Jeremy Hill has a 25-yard run and a 15-yard run and he finishes it off and he was a hot hand. But that doesn't mean the next series Giovanni Bernard's not going to come out there and split out or catch a swing pass. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
I don't know.
There's sort of a second end to this question that I got from somebody else that I want to break. This is from at TWSS Twins. And Twins. at saying, looks like they're giving Hill a lead blocker more. Fullback, I formation, two-back sets. Is that going to be a focus this year? I think so.
Yeah. We noticed that last year when Hugh was splitting Jake Fisher out and Hewitt out, that it was a lot of single back sets early.
The offense so much because of what they could do did favor Gio last year because they were always running the 3 and 4 wides because that's where their weapons were. And I think this year it's going to be the opposite, going back a little bit more to 14, where they focus more on the running game and I formation because that's where their weapons are. Ryan Hewitt and Tyler Eifert are... and Jeremy Hill, and that's under that setting, are their weapons, their offensive lines are weapons. So I do think we'll see a little bit more of that. And that does tend to look good for Jeremy Hill, which is why I think Jeremy Hill's going to have a huge season.
Yeah, and it fits. And again, I guess it's hard to compare years. I mean, last year, Paul, Marvin Jones and Mohamed Sanu were better, right? As of this point a year ago, those two were better than Brandon LaFell and Tyler Boyd going into week one. You know what I mean? And Jeremy Hill, you figured, okay, well, he proved enough that he can handle a single back set. Our line's good. Well, then as the year developed, we realized, Jeremy Hill is not running the same behind a single back set. But you know what? It doesn't matter because the quarterback and those three receivers and that tight end were so good. Whereas this year, I think at least initially, yes, Ryan Hewitt and Tyler Eifert, when he comes back, are probably better options than going three wide with Tyler Boyd, Brandon LaFell.
Absolutely. I do think that in the small bits of the first team and Ken Zampezi's scheme that we've seen, that's what we've seen so far. So maybe you guys are always asking us the question, how's Ken Zampezi's offense going to be different? I think we might be starting to get inklings that is a little bit of how it's going to be different, with a little bit more focus on the power running game. Which is surprising from a guy whose system is Air Coryell.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's not going to go away.
Right.
I mean, you're still the whole point of that is the play action off of that, and then you have 18 and 85 and all those things. Another question from, let's see here, we've got one. Okay, from Robbie Kunhein. Says, does the early emergence and versatility of Nick Vigil reduce the chances of PJ Dawson being able to contribute? I'll let you start off now.
Well, I mean, you got to go by reps and what you see in the game. So the easy answer is yes. I mean, Nick Vigil is running second team, middle linebacker and base, and he stays on the field in nickel. And that means he's with Vinnie Ray or, you know, they've kind of bounced around that nickel spot. I think week one, Marquise Flowers got some run, and then PJ did get some run, but the constant is 59. So, and then now, you know, and that's because Vontaze Burfict isn't playing. So, yeah, I think it's very, very clear that, and we saw this in training camp in the practice we could see, Nick Vigil was in that spot. I mean, right now, PJ Dawson is the third string or second string Sam linebacker if they go base, and then third string nickel after Vinnie Ray. Like, this is assuming with Vontaze Burfict.
Yeah, and Carlos Dansby, right, also a guy in the mix. And when PJ has been in there, we haven't seen much.
No, not unlike a year ago.
Yeah, a year ago he really flashed, and he just hasn't made a ton of plays. He's been around, he's done a few things, but you haven't seen him the way he showed up last year. And I think they're looking for more of that, and clearly they like what Nick Vigil can bring them, because they're giving him all kinds of opportunities to show himself much earlier in the game than PJ is. So, yes, to answer your question, I do think that Nick Vigil is cutting back into the chances of PJ Dawson being a guy that takes over and gets snaps or has a bigger role on this team. And Vigil's shown up on special teams a little bit too.
Yeah.
We've seen him make the play or come very close to making a play and reroute something on a number of occasions. So, you know, there's something to that as well when you start talking about, because then you start talking about the 46 versus the 53.
Right.
If they're choosing between who's going to be up on a game day, well, if you're a linebacker, you're number 5 or 6, that is a guy that needs to be on special teams and be good at it.
Right.
And I think that would maybe go towards Vigil at this point.
Yeah, I mean, PJ Dawson obviously has that year of experience. He was his primary role when he was active a year ago was on special teams. But again, you're right, Paul. I mean, 47, if we've seen him, actually miss tackles this year in these first two preseason games. And so, yeah, I mean, Vigil, now they picked on him again in coverage. He gave up another long passes 2 weeks in a row where he's been kind of exposed a little bit as far as a rookie and reading routes and quarterbacks being able to kind of pick on him a little bit. But those are rookie things. And clearly the team is like, well, we're living. Like, those singular instances aren't enough to outweigh sort of all the other stuff, and those are just sort of the growing pains of being a rookie linebacker.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Last Twitter question before we got to get out of here, from Seth Bernard, who asks us, does Margus Hunt make the 53 if today was cut down day? #BBP. Thank you, Seth. Yes.
Yes. Yeah,
he's gonna make this team. He's the backup for Carlos Dunlap right now.
Yeah.
That's his spot. There's no one else to take over that spot. And then when you factor in the injury to Andrew Billings, putting him on IR, you're back at 9 defensive linemen. So you're not even thinking about the possibility. I mean, he is the number 2 defensive end, and there is nobody competing with him really for that. So,
yeah, really, I mean, Paul, I think what everyone wanted to see is, because he's coming up in a contract year, the Bengals like their draft picks. They like to extend guys, all that stuff. I think they really just want to see, okay, finally, is he healthy? Is he in the shape he wants to be in, which he said he kind of went back to some of his old school training, you know, the track and field bent, right? Weightlifting, whatever it was. And he wasn't going to supplant Michael Johnson or Carlos Dunlap. I think what they were hoping was he could give some extra pass rush next to Geno Atkins inside. He really hasn't been able to do that. If Carlos was hurt, or we mentioned the rotation, you don't want to fall off. You want Carlos to come out of the game and 99 does his assignment, gets some pressure, creates. And you're just not seeing it. And really, Paul, it's just, okay, he's a fourth defensive end. He's just a guy. So he, you know, you hope to, I think that was the hope. 4 years in, he finally is getting it and doing it, and you're not just, you're just not seeing it. So yeah, he just kind of remains what he is.
What he is, and he's the backup to Carlos Dunlap, and Carlos Dunlap is going to play around 85 to 90% of the snaps.
It messes up Jacob Birney's season-opening goal of wanting a rotation, because I can't see Paul Gunther looking at this and saying, you know what, we're going to take Carlos off the field for a series.
Yeah.
Or for, you know.
Not for Marcus Hunt. Right. At this point. Right. I mean, that's clear, and Paul has made it abundantly clear. He doesn't care how much of a rotation Jacob Birney wants.
Yeah.
He's not going to rotate guys if there's a big drop-off, and there is currently a pretty big drop-off from 96 to 99. All right, well, thanks for all your questions. There were a bunch of them, and sorry we couldn't get to everybody. We tried to, but those are some of the main ones we've hit on. We are zeroing in on the Cincinnati area, so we're getting closer. I'm going to wrap this up.
More Orange Cones. Getting close.
Yeah, we're getting close to where there's going to be a lot more Orange Cones. All right, so our song on the way out. You know what? I mean, it's we have to have some sort of road trip song.
Yeah.
You know, we only get to do so many of these road trip BBPs a year. Well, this year it's just going to be this one, Pittsburgh, and
Cleveland.
That's it. That's it. Those are our only road. So, but we'll have some more. But so we got to get a good road trip song. And really, I'm thinking Tom Cochran, Life is a Highway.
Yeah.
It's a catchy little ditty from the early 90s.
Your life sucks.
Your life,
your highway is 175, is I-75.
Yeah, if your highway is I-75, your life is in bad shape. You're not real happy with your life. But we'll go out with that. So our road trip live from the Honda Accent has come to an end. I hope y'all enjoyed it. We'll be back under the beautiful sounds of our microphones and everything else next week. So we have Jacksonville game on Sunday Night Football on NBC. I'll be down
there.
Prime time.
Huge Tate.
Prime time storylines. Oh, yeah, no doubt. So we'll have the next BBP. Well, we'll talk about that. We may have to do them. There's such a long break between these two games. Bengals practice in Dayton on Sunday, the 21st. So if you're listening in the Dayton area, maybe we'll see you out there. Then we have a new home for Hofbrauhaus. At Hofbrauhaus for our Beyond the Stripes show. We've moved from Cincinnati side. We're over the river now at Hofbrauhaus Newport. Same great show. Much more accessibility, easier and cheaper parking. There's a lot there. It's only $2 on the levy. You don't have to worry about any of the Reds crowds that are all going to be down there and everything else. But same show we have. Marcus Hunt's going to be our guest. He is going to try to teach us the shot put and the discus in our Olympic spirit here. We're talking about all that kind of stuff and some other topics that we just went over here on this pod. So come on down there. It's going to be a lot of fun. And other big news on that front will be coming up in the very, very near future. So keep an eye out for that. We're some stuff we're really excited about. So anyway, Life is a Highway. We'll bring that back. We're hopefully going to get off the highway very soon. So we will talk to you later with the BBP. Have a good one.
Sometimes you turn your back to the wind. There's a world outside the darkened door where blues won't haunt you anymore. With a brave heart, free and lover's soul, come ride with me to the distant shore. We won't hesitate, break down the guarded gate. There's not much time left today. Life!